Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Morena Rod Oram, how are you?
Morena Rachel, very well, thank you.
Thank you for phoning us all the way from America today as well. It's fantastic.
My pleasure. It's a pleasure to talk about relatively sensible politics rather than the insane politics here.
Yes, I was going to say, different kettle of fish.
R&R for me.
Yes, we can bring you back to some soothing cabinet reshuffles and party reshuffles as well. Shall we start with talking about the sort of shuffling that's going on in politics at the moment? The National Party one's been the most sort of dramatic, I guess. Amy Adams has announced that she's not going to be rerunning in 2020. What does this mean, basically, Rod?
It's a bit of a surprise because she was well thought of from her ministerial roles in the past, such as justice and environment in the previous national government. And she was very clearly pegged out to be the finance minister in the next national government. When they get to form one. But she's saying that she's been in politics a long time. She's tired. She wants to spend time with the family. So she's off at the election. There was a fairly straightforward elevation, which makes sense in terms of Paul Goldsmith taking on her role as finance spokesman,
right.
But also taking over the infrastructure spokesman role from Judith Collins.
This is interesting.
Yeah, if one can read into that one, what one might. And then there were some minor rearrangements of people because Goldsmith had been doing a good job on the regional economic development portfolio and getting in some, landing some good hits on the government. And Chris Bishop and Todd McClay have moved into that split role. That was the big surprise. My feeling about it is that Adams has been a good minister in many respects, but I think she was struggling to find her voice on finance. So, for example, going into the budget, and indeed after the budget came out last month, what she was constantly just repeating was a bunch of political one-liners that have come out from a National Party focus group. They were just a whole bunch of slogans, which really weren't getting to giving us any particular interesting insight into the budget. So my feeling was that she really wasn't on top of the vast complexity of finance. So it'll be very interesting to see how Goldsmith does.
Yes, totally. So apart from Amy Adams sort of leaving, I guess, were there any other surprises really in the way that that's been shuffled? Or is it all sort of, I guess it makes logical sense for Goldsmith to be stepping up to that. But any other sort of surprises within that shuffling?
No, the other MP who announced at the same time that he would not be standing at the general election is Alistair Scott, the MP from Wairarapa.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, as the closer we get to the next election, I'm sure there'll be some more resignations, more retirements of various people.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to suggest who should retire.
Keep those opinions to ourselves privately.
We will.
So other shuffling that's going on is, of course, the cabinet reshuffle, which happens today. And Jacinda Ardern has said that there won't be any surprises necessarily. What do you think that means? Do you have any sort of anticipation for what that's going to look like once the cabinet's had its reshuffle?
I'm not sure about this, and I'm. But what is clear, this has been one of the most much anticipated and played down cabinet shuffles in a long while. So expect it to be underwhelming. Obviously, all the focus is on Phil Twyford and whether he retains the Minister of Housing role, given all the problems with the Kiwi Build. But again, the Prime Minister has gone out of her way to acknowledge that progress is far slower than they had promised. But it seems as though the government as a whole is taking responsibility of that, and that's probably fair enough in that this is the policies that are unfolding had been long developed by the party. But it's also a crucial time where Twyford has to navigate a whole bunch of big things, such as, for example, the merging of Housing New Zealand, our public housing provider, into a new urban development agency. So I my hunch is he will stay. But of course, his other role is Minister of Transport.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been problems there with NZTA, the transport agency, all sorts of management and governance problems that have come to light in the time he's been minister, presumably brewing for a while before that. So I wouldn't be surprised if he loses transport, in which case the candidate widely seen as the most likely person for a big promotion is Chris Farfoy. He's proved to be a very good Minister of Commerce and Consumer Affairs and Customs, but he's been very busy since September, because when Claire Curran and Mecca Faitiri handed back their warrants, he took on both those portfolios.
Right.
And he's been deemed to have done a good job in those.
Okay.
The other people thought to be vulnerable are David Clark as Ministry of Health. But again, he's just come out of the budget with an extra $1.9 billion for mental health. So that might be one reason, you know, is a good reason for keeping in place. And then the other person is Ian Lees Galloway, who's had more than a few immigration problems and mishaps. So those are the vulnerable people, it looks like.
Right. There's also been a lot of talk about how we might be changing the voting system, I guess, so that it makes it more accessible, more democratic. There's been lots of talk about same-day enrolment and voting, so on the actual election day, being able to enrol and then immediately vote. There's also been a lot of talk about bringing more ballots in ballot boxes into accessible places like malls, like supermarkets. There's already a few in those spaces, but just making it more prolific, I guess. What is the purpose of doing something like this, and do you think it's worth pursuing?
Yes, absolutely. And I would also put high on that agenda electronic voting.
Mm.
There are plenty of ways to do that securely. And that's obviously going to be a way of helping to increase the proportion of younger voters who actually cast mm-hmm. their ballots, which I think is incredibly important. But as worthy as those are, and I hope they're pursued, it's actually about making the political culture mm-hmm. more interesting and making people feel more involved and that their vote counts if we're really serious about improving democracy in that sense. And that's a whole wider issue that obviously narrowly within the confines of current reports it has not been tackled, but I think that's a very big one. The other thing that's going around is a report from the Institute of Governance at Victoria
yes.
University about whether we or not we should extend our parliamentary term from 3 years. And the data is really fascinating. So it looked at 190 countries that have parliaments.
Mm-hmm.
103 of them are five-year terms, 74 of them are four-year terms, and only 9, of which we're one, are three-year terms.
Mm.
So we are an incredible anomaly in that. Therefore, the report was arguing for a longer term, which is something I'm in favour of, but I'll come back to my if, buts and ands around that in a moment.
But it's interesting because they've sort of specifically argued for the four-year term, I think, is what they've recommended. They've also argued that another 30 MPs might be a good sort of number to bring into the government, basically, for future generations. It's meant to sort of be, I guess, making more representatives is meant to be more representative of the people, I guess. What do you think about that, bringing more MPs in?
I'm in favour of it for the reasons you've given, but also for a second reason, which is related to the longer term.
Mm.
We've got a really unusual structure in New Zealand because we don't have a written constitution, we don't have courts that overturn policy decisions, and we don't have an upper house exercising some control over mm-hmm. the lower house. So therefore, there's a real role, and the Institute of Governance was arguing for this, for select committees
mm-hmm.
To spend far more time analysing legislation as it's going through Parliament and improving that parliamentary process, which again, if that's done well, would be a useful way to help citizens feel more empowered.
Mm.
But to do that, you're going to need more MPs. And look, I'm not a gallery journalist, so I'm not around Parliament. But my sense from the MPs that over the years that I have got to know and just sort of keeping an eye on Parliament generally, inevitably there's a bell curve in our of some absolutely exceptional politicians and some people who really shouldn't be there at the other end. But in the middle, and it's a substantial middle, there's not many freeloaders in Parliament. There are people who do a really good job for their constituents or on particular issues. And, you know, they do work pretty hard. So actually, those are all reasons why I'm in favour of increasing the number of MPs.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Rod, for your time this morning and for phoning us all the way from America as well. I hope you enjoy your travels over there. Is it a work or a pleasure that you're in the States?
Family matters family brought stuff. Me here, but I still find myself sitting here writing my column for Newsroom tomorrow. So such is the life of a freelancer when in communications are instant.
Fantastic. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Rod. We'll speak to you soon. Cheers.
Thanks. All the best.
All the best.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.